Music and the Muse. Music resembles poetry. In each are nameless graces which no methods teach, and which a master hand alone can reach. Music and the Muse, blending the magic of poetry, read by Janet Logan, with Thomas Mancini's violin. Music and the Muse, for those who follow the star of dreams.
Greetings, everyone. This is Janet Logan. Many poems have been written about a certain type of woman with whom you are no doubt familiar. Here's a four-line effort by Jack Gormley. As radio comedy experts might say, it has a little different switch. Her favorite subject is herself. Of her, she's always telling. Her talk's more filled with I than Mississippi's spelling. By Bertha Powell Wilson is entitled Legacy. I do not have the energy of pulsing, vibrant health. But I do have a legacy, a golden store of wealth. Since I must go a slower pace, I have more time to see the subtle, haunting beauty in a brown and leafless tree. My eyes can find the loveliness that otherwise might miss, had I less time to think of them in quietude like this. A redbird is to you a bird that flashes by a wing. To me, it is a flaming joy, a glorious lilting thing. My window frames a willow tree where dark green shadows lie in tangled patterns on the grass. Beneath the summer sky. Beyond this little bit of lawn, in rows direct and true, my neighbor has a strawberry patch, and I a lovely view. rises up at break of day, and through her task she races. She cooks the meal the best she can, and scrubs the children's faces. While school books, lunches, ribbons too, all need consideration. And yet the census man insists she has no occupation. When breakfast dishes all are done, she bakes a pudding, maybe. She cleans the rooms up one by one, with one eye watching baby. The mending pile she then attacks by way of variation. And yet the census man insists she has no occupation. She irons for a little while, then presses pants for daddy. She welcomes with a cheery smile returning lass and laddie. A hearty dinner next she cooks. No time for relaxation. And yet the census man insists she has no occupation. For lessons that the children learn, the evening scarce is ample. To mother dear, they always turn for help with each example. In grammar and geography, she finds her relaxation. And yet the census man insists she has no occupation. This little poem, The Violet, was written by Jane Taylor, who more than a century ago gave us the beloved child classic, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. Down in a green and shady bed, a modest violet grew. Its stalk was bent, it hung its head as if to hide from view. And yet it was a lovely flower, its colors bright and fair. It might have graced a rosy bower instead of hanging there. Yet it was content to bloom in modest tints arrayed, and there diffused a sweet perfume within the silent shade. Then let me to the valley go, this pretty flower to see, that I may also learn to grow in sweet humility. First recital was written by Virginia Conover. Scrubbed and starched, with crisp curls sculptured round her face, ribbon stiff with newness, primly she takes her place. Looming like a giant bird, black, forbidding, still the reluctant piano warily awaits her simple will. Butterfly skirts across the bench, back straight and pointed toe, she lifts small hands above the keyboard. Suddenly we know the fragrance of a garden in a long-forgotten France, where perfumed lords and ladies weave an ornamental dance, while myriad fountains fling bouquets of rainbow-colored light and tinsel laughter glitters in a moon-enchanted night. A painted peacock primps and struts and spreads his jewel fan beside a silver pool. Then, suddenly as it began, the dream is done. And yet, is that young Mozart bowing after his minuet?
Thank you.
Complying with many requests, I'd like to read Robert Browning's famous poem, My Last Duchess. That's my last duchess painted on the wall, looking as if she were alive. I call that piece a wonder now. Frau Pandorf's hands worked busily a day. And there she stands. Will, to please you, sit and look at her. I said Frau Pandorf by design, for never read strangers like you that pictured countenance, the depth and passion of its earnest glance. But to myself they turned, since none puts by the curtain I have drawn for you but I, and seemed as they would ask me if they durst, how such a glance came there. So not the first are you to turn and ask thus. Sir, 'twas not her husband's presence only called that spot of joy into the Duchess' cheek. Perhaps Fra Pandorf chanced to say her mantle laps over my lady's wrist too much. Or paint must never hope to reproduce the faint half-flush that dies along her throat. Such stuff was courtesy, she thought, and cause enough for calling up that spot of joy. She had a heart, how shall I say, too soon made glad, too easily impressed. She liked whate'er she looked on, and her looks went everywhere. Sir, 'twas all one. My favor at her breast, the dropping of the daylight in the west, a bough of cherries some officious fool broke in the orchard for her, the white mule she rode with round the terrace. All and each would draw from her alike the approving speech. Or blush, at least. She thanked men, good. But thanks somehow, I know not how, as if she ranked my gift of a 900-year-old name with anybody's gift. Who'd stoop to blame this sort of trifling? Even had you skill in speech, which I have not, to make your will quite clear to such a one, and say, just this or that in you disgusts me. Here you miss all, there exceed the mark. And if she let herself be lessened so, nor plainly set her wits to yours forsooth, and made excuse, in then would be some stooping. And I choose never to stoop. Oh, sir, she smiled, no doubt, whene'er I passed her. But who passed without much the same smile? This grew. I gave commands. Then all smiles stopped together. There she stands as if alive. Will please you rise. We'll meet the company below then. I repeat, the count your master's known munificence is ample warrant that no just pretense of mine for dowry will be disallowed. Though his fair daughter's self, as I avowed at starting, is my object. Nay, we'll go together down, sir. Notice Neptune, though, taming a seahorse. Thought a rarity. Which claws of Innsbruck cast in bronze for me?
Thank you.
E.C. Stedman, in his essay Victorian Poets, wrote, "Poetry is art, and chief of the fine arts. The easiest to dabble in, the hardest in which to find true excellence." This is Janet Logan saying goodbye until next week.
As the strains of melody fade away to join with other pleasant memories, again Music and the Muse is ended. Featured with Thomas Mancini, violinist, were William Sobranski, organist, Ray Kramer, cellist, and Catherine Joulet, harpist. Poems read by Miss Janet Logan were Tiresome Topic by Jack Gormley and the American Bard, Legacy by Bertha Paul Wilson and Souls Triumphant, No Occupation by Elsie Duncan Yale, The Violet by Jane Taylor, First Recital by Virginia Conover, and My Last Duchess by Robert Browning. Musical numbers included You Are the One by DeMay, Panis Angelicus by Franck, Entr'acte by Helmsberger, Berceuse by Ilginski, Minuet by Mozart. Music and the Muse was edited by John Kraft and produced by Clinton Stanley.